Good afternoon, and thank you for coming, and I really appreciate being selected to present my study. And within the theme of providing care for individuals with disability, I'm a little bit different than some of the other speakers in that I am highlighting and targeting the pediatric population, and in particular pediatricians who would be providing care and working with children and families who have autism spectrum disorders. I have no disclosures, no conflicts to disclose. I will disclose that this project was part of my capstone research project, part of my master's in public health, which I will be, as was said before, receiving in December. And it was a labor of love, and it was also an opportunity to really reach beyond what I ever thought I was interested in that this is a qualitative study, and I've been quantitative all my life, and I got hooked. So I hope you get as excited as I have been about this study. So shared decision-making. Shared decision-making is a process in which there are more than at least two different parties. Usually you're talking about a family and a care provider. Could be a pediatrician, and also part of the study we work with nurse practitioners. It includes information exchange, whether it be information about treatments or availability or different aspects. Some kind of discussion of treatment preferences. So not someone preaching to the other, but an exchange back and forth. And then an agreement or a consensus on treatment plan. Unfortunately, most research on shared decision-making has focused on adults, and we really know very little about how parents and pediatricians might approach shared decision-making, whether it actually occurs, and how best it might be implemented in routine care in a pediatric practice. Many pediatricians are comfortable with treatment decisions for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, but not so much for autism spectrum disorders. And for the purpose of this talk, I may switch back and forth saying ASD and autism and kind of including them all in one different category. Some of the comfort may be related to the fact that the American Academy of Pediatrics has worked very hard to develop clinical reports and clinical toolkits for ADHD management, which has really been implemented into care quite nicely, and most pediatricians are comfortable, despite the fact that over the last 10 years or so, there have been clinical reports and toolkits, the same level of comfort has not been developed. So when you look at types of treatment decision-making, most people talk about the spectrum, and not to be funny with autism, but the range. So it goes from paternalistic, which is the old time where the doctor knows everything and knows all, tells all, and says you have to do this. I guess since in pediatrics there's a lot of women, we could say maternalistic. To the other end of informed decision-making, which also people might call consumerism, where there is primarily the decision is made by the family. So when we're looking at the three stages of decision-making or shared decision-making, where we're looking at information exchange, discussion of treatment preferences, and deciding on treatment, paternalistic is really one-sided. We're coming from the pediatrician. Informed decision-making may include the physician giving information to the family then taking the information and making the decision on their own. And then in the ideal, or what I would consider the ideal situation, where you have shared decision making, where there's a reciprocal interchange of information, a really good discussion, and then both the family and the physician deciding on treatment options together. The aim of my study was to describe factors influencing shared decision-making for treatment decisions by general pediatricians and parents of children with an autism spectrum disorder. So we interviewed 20 pediatricians who were members of the Children's Hospital Philadelphia Primary Care Network, which is really enormous and is even bigger than when we conducted the study. It's drawn from four urban, which are primarily teaching practices, and 17 suburban practices around the southeastern Pennsylvania region. It included 20 families of children ages 2 to 5 years with autism. They were recruited through primary care, the Division of Child Development, or the Center for Autism Research. This study was approved through the IRB at Children's Hospital Philadelphia and University of Pennsylvania, and consent was obtained prior to the interview. We conducted semi-structured, in-depth interviews in person or by telephone using a pre-established interview guide. The interviews were audio-taped, transcribed verbatim, and uploaded to a software package in Vivo 9. The data was analyzed using modified grounded theory to inductively identify emerging and common themes. The subject demographics include the 20 pediatricians that I talked about. Their mean age was 49, ranging from 37 to 67. Most of them were female, 80%. 85% were white, 15% were Asian, 60% practiced in an urban setting, and they were quite experienced. The mean age, or the mean number of years out of practice, was 19, and 85% were out of practice at least 10 years. And this is comparable to the rest of the network, so we felt that this was representative. The families also were middle-aged, average age 37. The child age was around 3. 75% of the children were male, which is in keeping with the prevalence of male gender in individuals with autism. Most interviewees were the mother, 85%. 25% were black, 70% white, and 5% Asian. Two-thirds of them, 65%, resided in the suburbs, and they were actually quite well-educated. So 58% had at least a bachelor's or more degree. Okay, so when we analyzed all of the transcripts, four different overall themes emerged. Many parents did not discuss their treatment choices, and pediatricians weren't comfortable making recommendations. Parents to use CAM, which is complementary and alternative medical treatments, reported conflict with their pediatrician, who often didn't feel competent to discuss the merits or problems. Both groups identified similar barriers to services, and families who experienced great stress found support in the community, but not from their pediatricians. So I'd like to give you some exemplars of those four themes. So for treatment choices, pediatricians were largely uncomfortable advising about treatments, and families reported that their pediatrician did not have knowledge about treatments. And I think this quote is telling, a mother of a four-year-old boy. There was no back and forth conversation, which is huge. So I guess it doesn't seem like he's very interested because he's not engaging me in conversation. So I'll just figure this out on my own. Then conflict about treatment. So the pediatricians felt they were not trained or competent to discuss treatments, but they really tried hard to keep families out of harm's way. Families report, again, little conversation about treatments and that the pediatricians weren't open to any discussion about the novel treatments. So the mother of a four-year-old girl said, "Everything I hear is, oh, it's anecdotal. If you don't have another solution for me, why would I not try a methyl B12 shot? Why should I go to a doctor and pay $750 to write me a script for methyl B12 because you guys won't even consider this treatment?" The third area included barriers of services. Pediatricians described cost and decreased access to services as a stressor, and the families also described similar issues and the costs of services. And the mother of a four-year-old boy said, "I kind of forced my pediatrician to give me whatever resources they had and then started calling on my own. It was very difficult to find a place for evaluation." And then lastly, in terms of support, pediatricians perceived or reported that the stress was really related to understanding and acceptance of the diagnosis. The families, on the other hand, reiterated there was no discussion about how they were coping. Families, and they got support from family members and providers in the community. Our support network, my immediate family, is separated by long distance. They, the pediatricians, don't offer much help, plus they don't have much expertise in it. So recurring themes. So when we looked at all of the different, the four major themes and how it matched up in terms of shared decision making, the first two, no discussion of treatment choices and conflict about CAM treatments, really met or failed to meet all of the characteristics of shared decision making. So it really highlighted that these are areas that absolutely need to be intervened with. So in conclusion, we found that pediatricians often did not view autism treatment within their scope of practice or competence. They can describe shared decision-making in the ideal, and parents do not view their pediatrician as knowledgeable or invested in treatment recommendations. They may independently pursue treatments without the benefit of medical oversight. They perceive treatment decision-making as asymmetrical in that they're making the decisions, and they receive emotional and other support from the community, but not from their pediatrician. We identified three different needs. Parents and pediatricians need realistic expectations. We need to come up with strategies to foster shared decision-making between families and pediatricians. And most importantly, we need improved education or training for pediatricians about autism and treatments. The limitations of this study is that the CHOP primary care network may not be representative of other general pediatricians in other locations. The families were highly educated and primarily Caucasian. We had no direct observation of visits and interactions, and we could not compare the perceptions of paired pediatricians with the parents we interviewed. So next, we'd like to link and study families and their providers, maybe look at shared decision-making by subspecialists for autism, and most importantly, come up with intervention strategies to improve the shared decision-making, both clinician-mediated and patient-mediated. This quote, I think, describes a lot of the issues. It was a pediatrician in the primary care network. It means that we are not just the experts prescribing the treatment. We don't have all the answers. We have to sort of listen to families and discuss options and give them the information and decide together to make a plan. I'd like to acknowledge the mentorship of Drs. Mandel, Fix, Barg, Frasso, and Shimri Kedem. I want to thank the Primary Care Network, my wonderful research assistants and staff for the generous time and the financial support I received in terms of carrying out this study. Thank you.